So now I would like to introduce our main speaker, Eve.
Hi, everybody. I'm Eve, and I'm an alcoholic. And I'd like to thank David for asking me to come down and speak. It's my first time at this meeting, and you know, I came into Alcoholics Anonymous when I was 21 years old, and everybody at that time was about my age that I'm at now, and I thought these people were way too old, and I wasn't ready, and I went back out for another 10 years. My sobriety date is January 16th, 1990, and I know that Alcoholics Anonymous saved my life. I started drinking when I was 11 years old. I picked up my first drink and my first drug at the same time. And I know this is AA, so I'll stay strictly with alcohol, because in the end, it was the alcohol that really took me down. But, you know, drugs were part of my story. And, you know, I came from, I grew up in Philadelphia area in the suburbs. And I came from an Irish Catholic family. And we had to go to church every Sunday. My parents stayed home. They didn't go to church, but the kids had to go. And because they were pretty hungover. Both my parents drank. They drank a lot. And I come from a whole line of Irish drunks. And when I was growing up, I just can remember, you know, my parents, and they'd have their friends over, and they were partying, you know, and it always looked so wonderful, and the drinks that they made looked so wonderful. But I didn't see the devastation by the end of the night, because I went to bed. But I do remember police coming over the house sometimes. I remember my mom and dad, you know, not speaking the next day. I remember the fighting going on because of the night before. I remember, as I was getting older, the partying, their drinking was really progressing, and the fights were really bad. I had a brother and a sister. My brother was 5 years older than me. My sister's 9 years older than me. And my brother is no longer alive. He died when he was 20 years old. And but I caught my brother smoking cigarettes. You know, so he made me smoke, so I wouldn't tell on him. You know, then I caught him drinking, and then I started drinking, you know, you know, and also started doing drugs. And my brother dealt drugs. And so I had a lot of alcohol available. I had other substances available. And I think now I have a granddaughter who is 12 years old. And I think, you know, I was 11 years old when I picked up my first drink and my first drug. Man, that's really young, you know. And when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, I mean, you guys are so lucky that you have this young people's group, because we didn't have that back then. I didn't have that. And I just never felt like I belonged in there when I went there at 21. But I really needed to be there at 21 years old. You know, my brother died when I was 14, and that's when I started drinking alcoholically. I was taking, you know, the little Gerber baby food jars. I would take whiskey to school, and in between classes, I would get that whiskey jar out of my locker, and I would swig that whiskey down. You know, I started out with the little jars, and then, you know, I graduated to the bigger jars, you know, and that was the progression of my drinking at school. But I also drank when I came home. My father was a bartender, so we had a lot of booze in the home. You know, he strictly drank beer. My mother was a beer drinker. As her alcoholism progressed, her choice of alcohol changed. And my mother was a Jekyll and Hyde drinker. And she also was a blackout drinker, and she passed out with lit cigarettes. And as a very young child, as young as 5 years old, I can remember, I had to stay awake because she would pass out, and she would catch herself on fire. Literally, I could be watching TV and I turn around and there she is, the nightgown's up, and you know what, I had so much anger towards her, and I can remember taking the pillow and just beating the shit out of her, trying to beat these flames out, you know. But the one thing I kept thinking is, I will never be like her, you know. At the end of my drinking, I was worse than my mother ever was. My drinking progressed through school. I did graduate high school. I don't know how. I mean, there was a lot of drinking. There was a lot of drugs. I skipped school a lot. We used to have absentee cards, and I forged my parents' signature on them. So they really never knew how much I skipped school, you know. They weren't real into my report cards or anything. I mean, they were really into what they were doing. They really weren't so much into me. And when my brother died, my parents just kind of, it was almost like they disappeared, you know, emotionally. And our family was very, very sick, you know. I became very, very sick. I got pregnant when I was 14 years old. And it was right, I found out right after my brother died, and I was 6 months pregnant. I lost the baby. And I was running to everything, and I realize that now. I was just such a runner. It was about a drink, it was about a drug, and it was about a man for me. And all three were killing me. And after I lost that baby, I was 14, and that's where I really believe I crossed that line into alcoholic drinking. And I got fake ID. I lived like 10 minutes across the bridge from Trenton, New Jersey. And I went over there and I drank a lot, you know, just about every day. There was a group we would take carloads and go over. When I got my license, how the hell I drove back and forth over that bridge, I don't know, because I was a blackout drinker, just like my mother. You know, I was a puker. I remember somebody giving me this party till you puke car, because that's, you know, it was like I would just, sometimes I would literally make myself throw up so that I could drink more. And I don't know if anybody else in this room can identify with that. But that's how my drinking was progressing. You know, I got out of high school. I started working at U.S. Steel. And that's where my brother was killed when he was 20 years old in an industrial accident. He had gotten clean. He was a heroin addict. And he had gotten clean. He had been clean for a couple years when he was killed there. You know, so I knew a little bit about recovery, but it wasn't really talked about in my family. You know, we used to say that my mother, I never looked at my father like he really had a problem, but I mean, my mother was blatant. You know, there was, I mean, all you had to do was look at her sometimes. Her eyebrows were singed, or she'd have some eyelashes. She wouldn't. Her hair was singed, you know. She had to keep cutting her hair because she kept burning it up. You know, and I can kind of chuckle about that now, but growing up, man, that was really a screwed up way to grow up, you know. And again, my whole thing was I'm never going to be like her. I met my first husband at U.S. Steel, and we had a very, very abusive marriage. You know, we were drinking a lot. We were drugging a lot. I say I learned how to give a punch and take a punch in that marriage. We had the cops over all the time. You know, they knew us on a first name basis. I knew a lot of cops in the area. In between being laid off from U.S. Steel, I would get a job bartending, you know, and again, my drinking was just really progressing. My husband's alcoholism and his drug addiction was progressing, you know, and I had told him he was a carpenter, and he was up on top of a really high building. He was doing a roof, and he almost fell off, you know, and he came home, and he was really shook up, and he said, I got to do something. So I said, yeah, you really got a problem. You need to go away, you know. So he goes to detox, and they give me this little, on a family session, I had to take this little survey on my drinking. You know, and the next thing I know, I don't know how it happened, but the next thing I know, I'm going to detox, you know. And, you know, my husband and I had agreed that if any, either one of us drank, the other one, I had two children in that marriage. I drank through both my pregnancies. I'm not proud of that. I will say that after I had given birth to my daughters, the most important thing for me was to make sure that I had some alcohol and I had some drugs when I got home from the hospital. It wasn't about taking care of this beautiful baby, that baby girl that I just gave birth to. It was about me. It was about me feeling like for 9 months I had to restrain from the type of drinking and drugging that I wanted to do. And that's pretty sad. And that's the disease of alcoholism and drug addiction. That's my disease. That's where it took me. My husband got out of the rehab. I stayed in a lot longer than he did. They put me in a psychiatric institution called Horsham Clinic, and it was in this beautiful facility in Horsham, Pennsylvania. And I thought, well, this is good, because I really needed a break. I mean, I was tired of being a mom, and my daughter Brittany, she was 1 year old, and Lauren was 3 at that time. And, you know, it's really hard trying to be a parent when you're drinking all the time. And I thought that because my daughters were bathed, they had beautiful clothes on, you know, mommy was there, kind of, that I was a good mom. And you know what? I mean, I wasn't there. My body was there, but I wasn't there for those kids. And I wasn't a good mom. It, you know, it's really hard to be a parent when you're drinking. I got out of that rehab, and my husband had gone golfing. He came home and he had a 6-pack of beer and popped open a can. He said, "You want one, Eve?" And I said, "No, I don't." And he popped open the second one, and he said, "You sure you don't want one, Eve?" And I was like, "Yeah, give me one." You know, and once I picked up that can of beer and I started drinking it, I was back on a roll again. And all I could think of was, you know what, I'm going to control my drinking. It was the drugs that was my problem. It wasn't the drinking. And I'm going to control my drinking. And I'm only going to drink on Thursday night. That was bowling night. And that worked for 2 weeks. And then it was... I'll drink Thursday night and I'll drink Friday night. And that worked for Thursday night and Friday night. And then I added Saturday night and then I added Sunday night. And the next thing I knew, I was drinking every day. I was consuming a lot more alcohol than I ever had. I was not using any other substances. But my drinking had progressed something terribly. You know, the fighting got a lot worse, you know. There were some knockdown, drag-out fights. I came to in a blackout with a butcher knife stabbed in the door. I went after my husband. That night I wound up with a couple broken ribs, a concussion. I was at the hospital, and I think that's the only thing that saved me from going to jail that night. And I just remember thinking, you know, like, this isn't the way it's supposed to be, you know. I mean, this isn't the way I wanted my life to be, you know. This is like rewinding here. I'm going back. This is the way it was when I was growing up. This is exactly what I said I didn't want it to be, you know. And I would dust the big book off, and I would dust the step book off, and I'd hit a meeting on one of those drunken hangovers, you know, and that's it, I'm done, I'm not drinking ever again, you know. And as soon as the jackpot was over, and as soon I was back in everybody's good graces, and as soon as the hangover was over, I was back picking up that first drink again. You know, and I bounced in and out of the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous for 10 years. You know, and my drinking was progressing. It was getting worse and worse and worse. At the end of my drinking, I was homicidal. I was suicidal. I laid in my bathtub one night, and I was wasted, you know. And I had that razor up to my wrist, and I thought, you know what? I just can't do this anymore. And all I could think of was, who is going to take care of my kids? My husband was a drunk and drug addict. My parents were just off doing their thing. And and I just thought, you know, I just can't do this, you know. The next day, you know, of course, I tied another load on, and it was when I was bouncing in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous, there was this one woman I used to see all the time. And I went to the grocery store, and I was really hungover. And here I see this woman, and I'm like, whoa. I'm trying to avoid her. I'm taking the grocery cart, and I'm trying to run away from her. And every aisle I went down, there that woman was right in my face, you know. And I tried to avoid her. And finally I figured, you know what? She's gone, thank God. And all of a sudden this woman appears in my face, you know. And she says, how you doing, Eve? And I'm like, I'm doing good. Good. I mean, I didn't shower. I didn't brush my hair. And I was doing awful. And I outright lied to her, and she knew I was lying. She said, really? She says, you know what? You look like shit. You smell like shit. And you're going to die. And she walked away from me, and I thought, well, F you, you know. But her words kept going through my head, you know. And I knew that she spoke the truth to me. And I knew that if I didn't stop drinking, that I was going to die. And it was probably a couple weeks later. I had tied a really good load on, and I fell asleep with a lit cigarette, just like my mom. And I came to, and I went into my kids' bedroom, and I looked at them, and I thought, you know, what am I doing? You know, I don't want to do this. I don't want to raise them the way that I was raised. You know, and I hit my knees, and I was like, God, you got to do something here. You know, either if I'm going to live, you got to help me, or let me die. And, you know, that morning, I went to Alcoholics Anonymous. I walked into the meeting, and that wonderful woman that I ran into in the grocery store was the woman who greeted me at the door. And she said to me, have you had enough, Eve? And I said, you know what? I can't do this anymore. You know, I don't want to do this anymore. I need help. You know, and that woman took me, and she embraced me, and she became my sponsor. She taught me how to grow up. She walked me through these wonderful steps, which gives me a way of living today. You know, she introduced me to the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. She gave me the solution to my drinking. You know, she taught me. She had so much patience. When I came in, you know, all I could do is not drink. All I kept thinking is, don't pick up that first drink. No matter what you do, don't pick up that first drink. And that's all I did for a long time. And eventually I started getting a little bit better, you know, and then I was able to start working these steps. And the steps were the key to changing my life, you know. She told me to get involved, get a home group. I had two home groups, you know, and she told me, start putting your hand out to the newcomer you owe, you know. She reminded me if I did what I always did, I was going to get what I always got. She gave me that hope that I so desperately needed, which is hang on, pain ends. You know, and the pain ended. It took time. You know, I wanted to drink for the first 9 months of my sobriety, every single day. And all I did was I just hung in there, because she would say, hang in there, Eve. Just hang in there. Push through this. You can do this. And I don't know, how am I doing with time here? I have what? Oh, okay. Thanks. That began my journey of recovery with this wonderful woman. And I didn't trust women. I didn't like women. And she would say to me, you know what? I want you to follow some direction here and some suggestion. And she said to me, I want you to make a woman's meeting. And I just looked at her and I thought, yeah, really? She was like, yeah, really. She said, I want you to make a book meeting, a big book meeting, a step meeting, which you guys call the 12 and 12. We called it the step meeting up in Philly. You know, I want you to go to a speaker meeting, and that way you don't have to worry about anybody calling on you and sharing. And then what other meetings you want to go to, then you make that, whatever you want to do. You know, I know you have two children. I know you're working full-time. And I'm not going to tell you to make 90 and 90 because I'm not going to put that pressure on you. You know? And she got me involved in service. You know, she nominated me without my permission, you know, to be alternate GSR. And next thing I know, you know, I was GSR. And then I was officer at large, and I was secretary, and I was involved for 8 years between intergroup and GSR. With that, I wound up going out to San Diego when I was 5 years sober for the international convention. I know our international convention is coming up soon. You know, for anybody that has never gone, it is a tremendous experience. And I believe that it was there where I really, really started feeling a part of. Because I was standing in this stadium, Jack Murphy Stadium, with 80,000 recovering alcoholics saying the Lord's Prayer, and you could hear a pin drop. And then you could start hearing the sobbing, the relief of so many people. This addiction kills. You know, I have been blessed with a job that I work in the addiction field, and I work with David and I work with Kristen, who I just adore them both. You know, and we watch people walk in the door of our rehab, and they're so broken down. You know, and their families are so torn apart. You know, and we get to watch them heal and walk out. The 12th step is in action in our rehab. You know, I have a God of my own understanding today. It wasn't that easy for me. It took me quite a few years, and my sponsor had said to me, you know, Eve, you better find a God of your own understanding or you're going to get drunk again. You know, and I had this God that I grew up with, and the Catholic God that was put into me, and my God that I grew up with was a punishing God. You know, so for me, I had to find this beautiful, loving God that was going to take care of me and give me the courage and the strength that I needed each day, you know, to not pick up that first drink and just to try to be the best person that I could be. You know, I continually work these steps, you know, and I think one of the most important steps for me, other than the first step, of course, is that 10th step. You know, I always have to be able, you know, to apologize to somebody if I've done wrong, you know, because I have a conscience today. When I was drinking, I didn't have a conscience. You know, it was, it's not just about me anymore, and that's the way it was when I was drinking. I have four grandchildren today. They've never seen me drink, you know. I stopped drinking when my daughter Brittany was 4 and my daughter Lauren was 6, and Britt's going to be 30 and Lauren's going to be 32. And when I picked up my 25-year coin, they were sitting in the front row, And it was a very emotional time for me, you know, because I made a lot of mistakes along the way. You know, my sponsor just kept saying to me, you know, the best amends that you can make to your kids is to never pick up that first drink or drug again, you know. And my home group is Open Door. It meets Monday, Tuesday, and Friday. I usually make about 4 meetings a week. I try to. And I sponsor 4 women, you know, because I was told right from the get-go I have to give back, you know, that I owe. And I'm kind of lost for words right now, but all I know is that Alcoholics Anonymous embraced me, gave me hope, and it gave my life back, and I will be forever grateful, and I'll just keep trying to give back, and I hope tonight I help somebody with a message of hope. Thanks.